ज्ञानतिमिरान्धस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनशलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः. सो वेलकम टु सैटरडे इवनिंग भगवद्गीता क्लास. एज यूजुअल वी विल रिसाइट द वर्सेस ऑफ द थर्ड चैप्टर विच वी आर करेंटली डिस्कसिंग. Since the last 2 weeks, we have been discussing a very important subject, the subject of karma. As we have seen, karma has been described by Lord Krishna as of the living entity. Karma esha, krodha esha, rajaguna samudbhavah, mahashano mahapapma, vidhyenam iha vairinam. Vairina means enemy. Mahapapma, it is the all sinful, all devouring, maha ashinaha, enemy, vairina of the soul. And it comes from rajaguna, the mode of passion. And it is later transformed into anger. Kama esha, krodha esha, rajaguna samudbhavah. Having identified that enemy that causes the jiva to turn away from Krishna, to become averse to his service, and to become bound in the cycle of birth and death, then Lord Krishna explains in the next verse, that is in text 38, of how different species in life here in the material world are covered differently by karma according to the kind of body that they possess. We saw that karma can manifest itself in 3 levels of intensities: mridu, madhya, and tivra. Mridu karma is generally meant for the human beings. Therefore, the analogy that is given in text 38 that we discussed last time is dhumena vriyate vahniye. Dhumena, dhuma is smoke. Just as smoke covers fire, similarly this kama covers the jivatma. This covering is quite thin because the fire is still visible, the fire is still usable, its heat and light can still be tapped. But nevertheless, there is a covering. It represents the human species, or just about the beginning of human species. Because it is only in this mridu kam avastha, the stage of mild covering of kam of the soul, that some kind of bhagavat smarana, that's inquiry, etc., can take place. When it comes to madhya kama, where kama is of medium intensity in covering the atma, this is generally found in the birds and the beasts. And this kama, although it is medium, but still it is sufficient enough to destroy any intelligence or spiritual intelligence of the living entity. That means the birds and the beasts have no capacity for perceiving or understanding or seeking spiritual knowledge. And further on, in tivra kama, where the kama becomes very, very intense, that represents the trees and the plants and stones and so on. The intermediate, the madhya kama, as explained by Lord Krishna in text 38, yatha adarshaha malena cha. Adarshaha means mirror, mala is dust. In the covering of the mirror by dust, the covering is thicker than the smoke around the fire. The mirror loses its quality of cleanliness. It loses its capacity to reflect the image of an object kept in front of it. But nevertheless, at least it is still identified as a mirror. That much is there. But when the intensity becomes more of kama, then we have the different species of life like the trees, birds. There are many stones also that have jivatmas. Maybe not all stones, but there are many, many stones that are living. You know this famous story of how Ahalya was cursed to be a stone by Lord Ramachandra. So there are many stones that are living also. Even mountains are living. It is said that in the Satyuga the mountains used to fly. And then Indradev, he clipped the wings of the mountains. And since then they have got lodged in one place. And Kaliyuga, of course, everything has become so gross that nothing can fly, even aeroplanes crash down when they fly. So this stage of Tivra Kam is so intense, the covering, that there is absolutely no possibility of spiritual awakening. It is total ignorance. The living entity is practically inert, practically without consciousness. Of course, not fully, because otherwise it would not be living. The fact that the Jivatma is there means that there is consciousness. But the degree of covering is so great that the eternal consciousness of the Jiva or the Atma is hardly able to manifest. You can hardly perceive it. Therefore, such living entities, they can hardly move. They cannot express themselves. At least the birds and beasts can express themselves in a way that we can easily see. Plants also have emotions. This was proved by Jagdish Chandra Bose and so many experiments. And even now, they see that when certain things are done, the plants react. In fact, plants are also very sensitive to many, many things. Many of our devotees who are running farms, agricultural operations, they actually chant the holy name along with their crops, sometimes with their flowers, because then they flourish, because they also feel satisfied. Because even a grain of wheat or a grain of rice, or a plant of rice, that is, has the Atma. That is why the plant is growing. And the Atma is what is being nourished when the holy name is being chanted. The body also flowers, it flourishes. Therefore we see that when people take to the spiritual life, they suddenly become very effulgent. They become bright-faced. They look very happy. They become more beautiful simply by chanting the holy name. The effect is on the soul, but naturally, because the soul is running this body, is maintaining this body, so the effect is naturally perceived on the body also. So similarly, the soul of the plant also gets nourished. Plant that also flourishes and luxuriantly grows. So therefore we can see that they also have feelings, but they are not able to express in the same way that the higher species like the birds and plants can, and birds and animals can do, what to speak of the human beings. So here that example is given, yatha ulbena avrita garbhena. Just like the fetus is covered by the womb, this covering is practically complete, because you cannot even identify the child inside the womb. You cannot see, you cannot hear, you cannot feel. The child is totally in a helpless condition, practically inert. The child in the womb cannot move. It is as if tied in one place. Just like the stones, they can practically not move. So these three stages of kama have been described here by Lord Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. It is only in the human stage of life that one can actually begin to understand spiritual life, to make inquiry. Of many, many lifetimes of transmigrating through all these different species and going through various coverings of kama, one comes to the stage of mridu kama in the human species by natural spiritual evolution. Without making effort, the Atma will be gradually promoted from the lower species to come to the human form of life. If in the human form of life, instead of making spiritual inquiry, which is the function of the living being, is possible, if the human being does not do this, then even though he or she has a human body, it is considered as good as a beast or maybe even like a stone. So there may be, relatively speaking, even within this mridukam, there may be mridu, madhya and tivra also. We can perceive in human society, there are some people who are very spiritually conscious, very spiritually sensitive, very much attracted by spiritual atmosphere, by spiritual subjects. And there are others who are in between, who want to come but are pulled by the outside world. And there are others who are totally absorbed in the outside world, totally covered by karma. Whatever you may do, it is very difficult to arouse some spiritual awakening in them. Prahlad Maharaj in the Srimad Bhagavatam explains, Matirna Krishne Paratah Svatova Mitho Bhipadyet Grihavratanam Adant Gobhir Vishatam Tamishram Punah Punas Charvita Charvananam. He is lamenting the fate of those people who are covered intensely by karma. Adant Gobhir Vishatam Tamishram. Adant Gobhir means they are simply servants and slaves of their senses. To gratify the senses is their only goal of life. Therefore, blindly they engage in sense gratification, vishatam tamishram, and they are headed straight for hellish conditions of life. And what is this sense gratification? This process of trying to fulfill one's kama vasana or the desires for sense enjoyment, punah punas charvita charvananam. It is like chewing the chewed. What you have already chewed and thrown away, you pick up again and start chewing. There is no juice left. Like the sugar cane that goes through the machine and the juice comes out. You drink the juice, it is very nice for the first time. Then maybe the sugar cane machine owner will again twist it, again push through, still some juice may be left. But you go on doing it, how much juice will be left? But still, after the sugar cane man has thrown away the sugar cane, of which all the juice has been extracted, and somebody goes and goes on that, then what is the intelligence in that? What does he get out of it? Punah punas charvita charvananam. Going on chewing what has already been done. In other words, this sense gratification has been done in every form of life. In all the species of life, sense gratification is common. And we have been doing it and taking this ras, this so-called pleasure of spiritual life. So Prahlad Maharaj explains, Matir na Krishne. Mati means the inclination. Krishna Mati. The Krishna Mati is not aroused in such people at all. Matir na Krishne parataha. By somebody else giving him instructions on Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, his Krishna Mati is not aroused. Parataha svatova. Even by that man's own efforts, Swataha, individually if he tries to do, still he is not able to arouse his Krishnamati. Mitho bhipadyet, or both. Somebody is trying to instruct him, plus he is trying on his own. Still that Krishnamati doesn't come. Why? Because he is totally absorbed in the activities of sense gratification. Calm. He is overpowered by calm. So such a person also is as good as a beast. Because a beast cannot understand the value of spiritual instruction. If you go and tell a dog on the street who's fighting, my dear friend, please do not become a victim of anger. Do not become envious towards your fellow dog on this. Chant the holy name. Listen, your Atma, he has no value for your instruction. He will not pay any heed. He will go on barking and jumping at the other dog. So a human being who similarly does not pay any heed to spiritual instruction is as good as animal. So within the human species also, so-called human species, they are animalistic human beings, dvipada pashu, covered by a great degree of karma. So therefore, the human species is the junction from where spiritual progress can take place. We saw that depending on the degree of covering of karma, we can have certain number of stages of consciousness. How many stages of consciousness did we discuss last time? We gave you that chart. Five stages. What is the lowermost stage of consciousness that represents the tivra kama, trees, plants and stones? What is that chetana called? Achhadita chetana. It is completely covered. The Atma's knowledge is completely covered. No question of understanding anything more. And then gradually, it may come a little bit. And at that time, it is called Sankuchit Chetana. Sankuchit means it is partly covered, like in the animals and the birds. Some degree of possibility is there. Still, Atmagyan is not possible. But the consciousness is slightly flowered. Atma's consciousness is the same, whether in the plant, in the animal, the bird, the human. The Atma remains Atma. Its consciousness, its qualities remain the same. But because the bodies are different, this consciousness is allowed to manifest to different degrees, or it is blocked to certain degrees by the covering. We gave the example of the bulbs and the colored paper on top. So then, gradually when it comes to human life, it is called Mukulita Chetana, budding consciousness. It has just begun to bud. You have seen a flower, say a rose or any other flower, that is just beginning to bud. And then gradually it becomes a blooming consciousness, the fourth stage. In the third stage of consciousness, it is the human stage, when spiritual inquiry begins. And at that time, really speaking, according to the Shastra, one becomes a human. Body of the human may be there, two legs, two hands, nose, ears, all these things. But actually speaking, one becomes a human at the point of Athato Brahma Jigyasa, when one starts making spiritual inquiry. And as one starts doing spiritual practices, making spiritual inquiries, then the consciousness blossoms, it moves up. It comes to the blooming state of consciousness. Now it is opened up slightly, the petals, and the flower is coming up. It is in the process of blooming. This represents a human being who is eagerly performing spiritual practices, who is eagerly making spiritual inquiries, who has developed some taste for coming to the temple. And then as the spiritual practices and inquiries continue, and that person, the sadhaka, makes more and more progress in his spiritual life and consciousness, eventually he reaches the perfection. That is a fully blooming state of consciousness. In that stage, he has developed full love of God. The pure eternal consciousness of the soul is now manifesting through the medium of this body. So these are the five stages of consciousness. And as this consciousness goes higher and higher, the calm covering becomes thinner and thinner and thinner. And when one ultimately becomes pure and realizes the pure state of the jiva, then the calm is totally destroyed. It is just like removing all the papers, all the covering from the bulb. Now the bulb is allowed to shine forth in its original brightness. So therefore, here, calm covers all the living entities, and in the coming verses, from text 39 onwards, Lord Krishna further describes the nature of this lust, or the calm that covers the Jivatma. So let us discuss this further, text number 39.
Avritam jnanametena jnanino nitya vairina kama rupena kaunteya dushpurena nalena cha.
Translation: his living entity's pure consciousness becomes covered by his eternal enemy in the form of lust, which is never satisfied and which burns like fire. Please repeat. Thus, the wise living entity's pure consciousness becomes covered by his eternal enemy in the form of lust, which is never satisfied and which burns like fire. So Lord Krishna mentions here, avritam jnanam etena. Jnanino, jnana, the knowledge of the Atma, etena, etena refers to by this, it is covered, the pure consciousness of the Atma is covered, avritam. And because of this, it is called Nitya Vairina. Nitya means eternally or always, long time. Vairina means, as we have seen in the previous verse, enemy. So this is like the eternal enemy of the soul. So long as the soul is in the material world, this kama is its eternal, constant enemy. It never leaves you, continues to harass the living entity. This is a very difficult situation. Somewhat like India-Pakistan situation. No? Always, it will go on like this only. Always this harassment will remain like an eternal enemy. It is going on. Never leaves you, never stops harassing you. So why is that? Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that kaam or lust, its subtle form is basically avidya. Avidya means ignorance. Somehow, because of the consciousness of the jiva being covered by this, it develops this avidya, and the avidya keeps on progressing and manifests more and deeper, and the kaam also progresses in that way. The jiva is conscious, Krishna is also conscious, but Lord Krishna's consciousness is complete, it is perfect. Lord Krishna is omnipotent. Lord Krishna's consciousness is infinite. But the jiva's or the atma's consciousness is atomic, infinitesimal. And the jiva is fully dependent on Krishna's energy to do anything. So the jiva, being part and parcel of Lord Krishna, has all the qualities of Lord Krishna, but in very minute quantity. And these qualities are manifesting in a perverted way in this material world. Why these qualities are manifesting in a perverted way? Because the jiva has free will, and the free will is being. The free will of the jiva is meant to be used to serve Lord Krishna. Because this is the nitya dharma. Nitya means eternal, dharma means the occupation of the soul. The nitya dharma of the soul, the swaroop of the soul, constitutional position, is to serve Lord Krishna. So the free will must be used for this purpose only. Therefore, this proper use of the free will of serving Lord Krishna is also called Nitya Jaiva Dharma, the eternal occupation of the soul. It is also prema or bhakti. This is the constitutional situation of the Atma. But if somehow the jiva misuses its free will, doesn't serve Lord Krishna, then it gets covered by kaam. So we have seen one definition of kaam in earlier sessions. So many ways we can see the same, so many angles to see the same concept. We define kaam as any desire other than the desire to serve the Lord. In the very first lecture on kaam we discussed. Another way of defining kaam is the desire to enjoy the sense objects. That is also called kaam. And here Bhaktivinoda Thakur also describes kaam in a very simple way. He says the misuse of free will is kaam. Such a simple, wonderful way of defining kaam. Misuse of free will is kaam, lust. So what is the proper use of kaam or of free will? To serve Lord Krishna. So if you are Krishna, that means it is improper use of your free will, and that is kaam. So the jiva becomes a victim of kaam. Originally, this kaam, which is as avidya, it transforms into ahankar, ego, making the jiva identify with this body. then the jiva starts thinking, I am this body. Although the jiva has nothing to do with this body.
Yaya sammohito jiva atmanam trigunatmakam paropi manute nartam yat kritam chabhi padyate.
In the Srimad Bhagavatam it is explained, Yaya sammohito jiva, by Lord's Maya Shakti, all the jivas are in sammoha, in illusion. Atmanam trigunatmakam. Triguna means the sattva, rajas, tamas, the three modes of material nature. Atmanam trigunatmakam. The Atma, being covered by Maya's influence, identifies himself with these three modes of nature and thinks, I am that. That means I am this body. And things pertaining to this body are mine. And they are the sources of my happiness.
Para api manute anartham. Para api. Although he is para, he is superior to this matter. But manute anartham. But he thinks, I am these material things. He identifies with his anarthas.
Tat kritam chabi padyate. And therefore he acts accordingly. So in this way, the jiva goes on acting because of this false identification of ahankar. So the ahankar is the first where its original knowledge of the absolute truth of God, of itself, becomes covered. And then the next door neighbor of the soul is the intelligence. The ahankar, when it develops, it corrupts the intelligence also. And in this way, progressively, it goes on. This will be discussed more in the next verse that we see. And then gradually as it goes on, all this leads to a complete bondage, karma bandhan, or samsara yatana. Karma bandhan means the bondage due to karma, and samsara yatana means that the jiva is forever forced to undergo the cycle of birth and death and the sufferings that come as a result of that. So that is why this is called nitya vairina, eternal enemy. Because it is this kama or this lust, the misuse of free will, that traps the jiva in great suffering in the cycle of birth and death. Who is an enemy? An enemy is one who is always giving us trouble, who is always creating dangerous situations for us, harassing us, isn't it? If somebody is your enemy, but he has no power to do anything to you, or he doesn't do anything to you, then what is the use of calling him enemy? He is no good as an enemy. But if that enemy has the power or ability to constantly harass you and cause you suffering, maliciously, mischievously, always causing you pain, and his only meditation is how to trouble you, then he is really enemy. So kama is like that, always harassing the jiva. From birth to death, even within the womb, and for every lifetime that the jiva has been here in this material world, relentlessly this kama is torturing and harassing the jiva with desires for sense gratification. And this traps the jiva in the cycle of karma bandhan, which eventually leads to sansara yatana, the sufferings. So because kama gives rise to so much suffering, it is called nitya vairina. And this suffering is not momentary, nitya. Every lifetime this suffering goes on. Therefore, this enemy is a very dangerous enemy, the greatest enemy of the soul. So our enemy is not Pakistan or this or that or our neighbor or our competitor or anybody else. But our enemy, all the enemy of all living beings in this world, is this lust, which is constantly harassing. And what is the nature of this thing? It burns like fire. Kama rupena, this enemy that is in kama rupena kaunteya, dushpurena analena cha. Dushpurena means it is never satisfied. Analena means like a fire. So a fire, when you pour some ghee or some oil or petrol into it, will it get extinguished? What will happen to the fire? It will blaze even more. So kama is like that. Kama takes charge of this consciousness and drives the jiva or the living entity to satisfy it. When the living entity acts to satisfy that kama, thinking that after that I will be pacified, it doesn't happen like that. On the contrary, the calm increases in intensity. Next time it becomes stronger. And again the jiva is driven to satisfy that calm with more vigor, with more power. And this time he thinks, yes, now it will be satisfied. But it is still not satisfied. And this goes on and on and on. So you can imagine, even in one life, in a few years of this life, we all have experience of how this calm is always pushing us to acts of sense gratification. So at every stage, with every act of sense gratification, we are pouring ghee into the fire. We are not going to get satisfied. It is simply increasing. And please remember, this has been going on for millions and trillions of lifetimes. So how strong the fire has become now? If it was only a few years, once, twice, thrice, you do okay, you will say eventually it will die down. But this process has been going on and on. Ghee and fire has been going on and on and on. So therefore we can never extinguish this fire of lust by trying to satisfy it. This analogy is mentioned many places in different shastras. The Manusmriti also mentions that you cannot satisfy calm by trying to enjoy the senses. The senses cannot be pacified in this way. Similarly, last time we discussed the example of King Yayati. And King Yayati finally, after being unsuccessful in trying to enjoy his senses, he now realizes. And then he preaches to his wife and tells how he has been trying for so many years to enjoy life, but he has been unsuccessful. You will remember that King Yayati engaged his old age for his youngest son's youth. Do you remember that story? The story of King Yayati that we had told. And even though he had a youthful body for so many years, still he was unable to enjoy. Then when he came to his senses, he returned the body of his son, the youthful body, and accepted back his old age. And then he took to spiritual life in a very serious way. And at that time he said a very nice thing. Najatu kamha kamanam upabhegena shamyati havisha krishna vartmeva bhuya eva abhivardate najatu kamha kamena. By simply trying to satisfy the kama upabhogena shamyati na shamyati. If you go on trying to enjoy doing bhoga, it will not get suppressed. Na kamah kamanam upabhogena shamyati. So it will not get suppressed simply by trying to enjoy more and more. In the same way that by pouring ghee into a fire, it will never get extinguished. Also further in the Bhagavatam it is explained, kamanalam madhu lavai shamayan dushpuraihi. By pouring a few drops of honey into the fire, you cannot extinguish it. On the contrary, it will just go on blazing. It will not pay any heed to your few drops of honey. So like that, there are so many instances and quotations in the Shastra. So this is very, very important. But still, there is a prominent philosophy going on from time immemorial, that first you enjoy your senses, become completely tired of enjoying the senses, and then when you have become satisfied, you have enjoyed all the objects of the world, then you take to spiritual life in old age. You have heard this argument before by people? It's a very common argument. Many of the people who are young, who come to our temple, invariably they are told by others. What are they told? This is not the age. You have heard? This is not the age for this. Then my dear friend, when is the age? When I have lost all my teeth, when my back is bent, when all these things, that is the time? No. It is not possible. Even in old age, everything remains. The sense desires remain. So therefore there is no possibility of these things reducing. In this story, there is a story in Srimad Bhagavatam of Daksha Prajapati and Narad Muni. Narad Muni, as you know, is a great devotee, preacher. And he is always looking for opportunities to make devotees. And Narad Muni's preaching is so powerful that anyone who comes into contact with him, he leaves the world and renounces everything. That is his potency as a preacher. So he came to a certain holy place and he saw that there were the 10,000 sons of King Daksha who were practicing tapasya there. They had been sent by King Daksha to perform austerities in preparation for their grihastha life. See, such was the culture. Before a person got married, he was supposed to do tapasya, austerities, so he could develop the discipline to live a proper dharmic grihastha life. So when Narad Muni saw these people performing austerities just for some material purpose, so that they could generate progeny, run the kingdom, this and that, so he started giving them some good instructions of higher spiritual achievements. They became immediately convinced and they renounced, did not go back. So Daksha was very disappointed and morose at this. But anyway, he said, okay, destiny is supreme, what to do? And then he had 1,000 more sons. And after, because Daksha is Prajapati, he is a son of Brahma, because when Brahma created the universe by the intelligence and facilities given by Lord Krishna, Lord Vishnu, he was alone. Then he, from his own body and mind, he created so many sons. And then he asked them to make progeny to populate the universe. So Daksha had another 1,000 sons. And in order to prepare them for begetting progeny, he again sent them for tapasya. And this time again Narad Muni came there. And he preached to them that you are very good boys. It is a duty of younger brothers to follow in the footsteps of the older brothers, because younger must follow the older. And he preached to them. Very soon they also became convinced. They also left. And when this happened, then Daksha became extremely angry, furious. And when Narad Muni came there, Daksha began shouting and screaming at him, although Daksha and Narad were brothers, both are sons of Brahma. But because Daksha's 11,000 sons had taken to a life of renunciation because of the preaching of Narad Muni, Daksha became so furious that he started calling Narad Muni ill names. He started saying that you are a pretender, you are just simply wearing cloth, saffron cloth like this, but you are actually a great cheat, you are this and that, many, many, many things. Prabhupada explains in the purports. Of course, we don't have time to discuss this wonderful story in detail, but Prabhupada explains in this purport that I also have to face similar situation. He said, that is the occupational hazard of a preacher, he said. Because I am going all over the world preaching this Bhagavad Dharma, and some young boys and girls are coming and they become so dedicated, they want to give their life for the service of Lord Krishna, but their parents become very furious. And they're always making accusations against me and calling me ill names. So he said, but I have taken inspiration from Narad Muni that I am coming in a glorious parampara. So anyway, so then Narad Muni heard it all very patiently, being a great devotee, being very tolerant and humble. He did not protest much. He just heard carefully, very humbly. And then Daksha Prajapati started giving his logic. He said, renunciation cannot be artificial. You cannot make a person renounce until he has internally renounced. By prematurely and artificially sending somebody for a life of renunciation, you are doing great disservice to them. In this point, it is correct that you cannot artificially renounce. But his logic for saying that is not so. They had not renounced artificially. Their renunciation was fixed because they had the mercy of Narad Muni, which he could not understand, Daksha Prajapati. So he went on to say that you see, in this world we have many duties and obligations. We have many debts to discharge. And if we try to artificially renounce those debts, and we take to renounced order of life when those debts are still there, it is sinful. It is not proper. One must discharge the debts and perform the duties in life, and then when these things have been done, then one may go and take a life of renunciation. And furthermore, he explained that in this world, sense gratification is a cause of misery. This is Daksha Prajapati is saying. That also he knows. But he said, one must actually experience the misery of sense gratification to be able to give it up. One must enjoy the senses for many years, and when one repeatedly suffers from the harsh reactions of the sense gratification, then that determination for renunciation, that sense of realization of that truth, will become so strong in the heart that renunciation will become a natural thing for that person. Then it will not be artificial, it will be very strong. So this was Daksha's argument. So he said, these boys are young, immature boys. They have not seen the world. They have not experienced the misery of sense gratification. And before that, you have taken them away. So Prabhupada and the Acharyas explained the purport, the fallacies in Daksha's argument. The biggest fallacy is when Daksha says that by experiencing the suffering of sense enjoyment, that you are going to get tired of sense enjoyment. Does it happen? No. This example is valid. Trying to enjoy your senses is like trying to pour ghee in the fire. The more you enjoy, the stronger your intensity or desire for enjoyment is going to become. There is no way that it is going to diminish. It will simply blaze like a fire, more and more and more. It will become an inferno, blazing inferno. And it will go on increasing. It will devour the intelligence. And we may think that I will enjoy so much and then give it up. But the more you enjoy, the more difficult it becomes to give it up. So therefore, better to give up at a stage when you have not been corrupted. And it is not that by having suffering, you are going to get some good sense in the head. No. The Acharyas explain that when a lady gives birth to a child, so much suffering, isn't it? So much labor pain. And she says, never again, never, never, never again I will do. One doctor devotee was telling, one time this lady, she was having intense pain at the time of labor. And she began to tell the doctor, you kill this child, you take him away. Because when there's so much pain, you lose intelligence, you don't know what you are saying. So the pain is so intense at that time. And he says, never again I will have. But very soon again it happens. So this is the way of life in this material world. We go on and on. Suffering doesn't make any difference. For some time we forget. We say, oh, so much suffering. Again, we are back in action. Again, again, the whole activity start. This is the nature of Maya. So Daksha Prajapati has not understood this very important point. So it is best to abstain, but to abstain in a regulated way. Not abstain by artificially renouncing this world prematurely. But every ashram is meant for us ashram. Every ashram is meant for regulation, for control. It is not meant for unrestricted sense enjoyment. Sometimes people think that they have two misconceptions. One, that renunciation means totally stopping sense gratification. That is one misconception. Second misconception is household life means total sense enjoyment. Both these misconceptions are wrong. Why is the first misconception wrong? Can anyone say? If you lead renunciation, totally no sense gratification. Why is it not correct? Anyone would like to? Yes? Yes, but we are saying don't enjoy through the body. In fact, it is Atma's enjoyment is Krishna, Krishna Bhakti. So why should you try to satisfy these senses? Why should you have sense gratification if you're leading a life of renunciation? for living purpose. That is correct. You need something to survive. The body and mind needs. So for example, even a sannyasi who is extremely renounced, he needs some food to eat. It may be less, it may be more, but he needs food to eat. So his tongue is being gratified. He needs so many other things. He needs some rest when his body is tired. He will have certain basic bodily necessities. So the senses, what is this process of eating, sleeping, taking rest and so on and so forth? It is simply sense gratification. But the motivation is different. The motivation is not to enjoy. The motivation is to maintain the body so the body can serve Krishna nicely. So the body is in a good condition to serve Krishna well. That is the difference in motivation. When the pure devotee or when the devotee serves in this way, this is called Yukta Vairagya. And by serving, then gradually, in a very minimal way, whatever is basically just required to keep the body and mind together, that much sense enjoyment is there. And of course, even if a sannyasi is eating some nice Krishna prasad, he is getting some pleasure out of eating, isn't it? He may be eating some Krishna prasad, but that pleasure is sense gratification. But his motivation is not that. So a basic degree of bodily fulfillment is required. Lord Krishna also explains in the Bhagavad Gita that one should not eat more than necessary, one should not eat less, one should not sleep more than necessary, one should not sleep less or more. Yukta hara viharasya yukta cheshtasya karmasu yukta svapna vabodhasya yogo bhavati dukkha. Eating, sleeping, work, recreation, food, everything must be regulated. Yukta ahara. Everything must be within limits. So for a sannyasi, that limit is little more strict. For grihastha, it is little relaxed, relatively speaking. That is the only difference. The only difference is of little bit of degree. Even in grihastha ashram, one is expected to be very strict. Not that because I am living in the freedom and independence of my home, I can do anything. Nobody is there to check me, nobody is there to regulate me. No, the shastras are there to regulate me. God is there to regulate me. The instructions of God are there to regulate me. That is why it is shastra. Shasdhatu, control, discipline. Shasana, discipline. Shishya, discipline. All come from the same root word, shas. So therefore, even grihasthashram, one is meant to discipline oneself and regulate one's sense enjoyment. But the nature of the ashram is, little more freedom, rope is given. Okay, you can enjoy this much more. But it is not a license, blanket permit to do anything you like. Watch cinema, watch TV, go here, hotel, enjoy, womanize. No, not like that. So all the ashrams are meant for regulation, to strictly control this element of lust, which is burning like fire. And gradually by this regulation, then that fire will gradually come down, down, down. And Krishna Bhakti is like that particular hose, that spray of nectar or water that will extinguish this fire. But side by side with doing Krishna Bhakti, if you are doing sense gratification, then what will happen? It is like trying to extinguish the fire with water and still putting ghee into it. Ghee, water is going on. So what will happen? It will continue to blaze. So therefore, after coming to Bhakti, we must follow these certain regulative principles of life. Regulative principles means, basically our four regulative principles are no meat eating, no intoxication, no illicit sex, no gambling. These four are the principal sinful activities of Kali Yuga. And when we do this, then we come to the mode of goodness. Because these four activities, they belong to Rajagun and Tamagun. And by avoiding this, we eliminate Rajagun and Tamagun in our life, or at least reduce it. And we try to come to Sattvaguna. From Sattvaguna, we are in a position to peacefully understand Atma Gyan, Bhagavad Gyan, to do Bhagavad Smaran. We are in a mental frame, in a physical frame of mind, to actually pursue spiritual activities in a very determined and meaningful way. Otherwise, for one who is engaged in sense gratification, he cannot focus his mind and consciousness in a fixed way on spiritual matters.
Bhogaishwarya prasaktanam taya paharita chetasam vyavasayatmika buddhi samadho na vidhiyate.
In the second chapter of the Gita, Lord Krishna explains, for one whose mind and intelligence have been stolen away, taya apaharita chetasam. Chetasam means consciousness. Apaharita means kidnapped. One whose consciousness has been kidnapped by bhoga, the feeling of enjoyment, and aishwarya, opulence, vyavasayatmika buddhi, samadho na vidhiyate. That steadiness of intelligence, vyavasayatmika buddhi, the fixing of consciousness on God, samadho, na vidhiyate, that never takes place. Therefore, in order to avoid the ill effects of this kaam, we must follow these four regulative principles as strictly as we can. We must try to avoid the association of places and people where these four regulative principles are violated. And in modern day life, there are many such places which are simply fueling the kama that is there in the heart. They are like petrol bombs that have been thrown. Petrol has been thrown. We are being showered with petrol. All over it is like that. And the worst enemy nowadays is this television. Because in television, all the four regulative principles are violated. Is it not true? All the television programs, what do you see there? Everything goes on, these four things. And many, many things are actually even gambling. All these Khelo India Khelo and all these things. Simply gambling. Everywhere you are seeing four regulative principles being violated. So one who is desirous of conquering karma must avoid those influencing factors that are adding, fueling our karma. At least minimum that much we should do. And more positively, we should come to the association of devotees here where that spray of nectarian Krishna Katha, Krishna Naam is sprayed on the fire to reduce it. So both things are required. To stop pouring ghee in the fire, at the same time to pour the water to extinguish the fire. So pouring the water is like doing spiritual practices. Chanting the holy name, coming, hearing Krishna Katha, lecture, doing seva in the temple, taking darshan of the Lord, and doing so many other forms of service like eating Krishna Prasadam. So these are the positive spiritual activities which extinguish the karma, destroy the karma. And those things which prevent the karma from increasing more, they are the four regulative principles in avoiding bad association. So by doing this, one will gradually come to this point of controlling this karma that is so strongly within us. We see from so many examples in the scripture of so many rishis and munis who learned by their bitter experience that trying to satisfy kama is impossible. There was a rishi called Saubhari Muni, and he was finding disturbance outside. So he went underwater by his yogic powers and he began to do austerities under the water. And he performed for many, many years, constantly 24 hours remaining in the water. He was able to do by his yoga siddhi. And one day he saw two fish mating in the water, because fish are going by. He saw two fish mating and in his heart he desired to enjoy the world. Soon after that his mind got agitated. He came to the surface, but he was already an old man, and because of staying underwater for so many years, his body had become thoroughly wrinkled and ugly. And he went to the kingdom, the palace of King Mandhata, who was a king. And he requested for the hands of his daughters in marriage. King Mandhata became very nervous looking at the plight of that yogi. Such an ugly old man with his skin completely gone because of so many years in water. So very intelligently he said, "My dear Muni, I don't mind, But you see, I have left the choice to my daughters because they have to choose ultimately. He passed the buck because he knew that if he said something no or anything, he might get a curse from this muni. And immediately this yogi understood Saubhari Muni, what was in the king's mind. And he knew that the daughters would never accept him as husband. Which young lady will want an old, ugly man, 100 years old, with all skin totally gone, everything. Especially princesses, they will not like. So he went back, and by his yogic powers, he became a very youthful, handsome young man. And he came back to King Mandata, and then he went to the daughters, and all the 50 daughters of King Mandata wanted to get married to him. Earlier, not one of them wanted to get. Now, all 50 daughters married him. And he married all of them. And he expanded himself into 8 parts, 8 expansions by his yogic power. It is said that a yogi can expand himself into maximum 8 duplicates of himself. Krishna can expand himself unlimitedly. In Dwarka, he had 16,108 palaces, and in each palace he had one of the queens, and he was there and present in all the palaces. And each palace he was doing something different. But when the yogis expand, it is something like a television picture. The man sitting in the studio is raising his finger, and in every television set, that man is raising his finger, isn't it? It is not that suppose the man is raising his finger in the television studio in the camera, in your house he is putting his hand down, another hand is putting his hand like that. No, everywhere the same picture will come. So all the 8 or 9 forms of the yogi, they do the same activity as the original. So anyway, he lived like this for in eight forms, living with his 50 queens or wives, and it went on for thousands of years. And finally one day he put his hand to his head and said, what am I doing? Where was I and where am I now? I was engaged in tapasya under the water for spiritual achievement, and I have become so much patabhrashta, I have fallen away from my path to such an extent for thousands of years. Then immediately he gave up everything again, and his queens, and also they realized, and they also took to the spiritual path. He realized after years and years. Similarly, we saw the story of King Yayati. He also realized after so many thousands of years, our lifetime is only few years. So we should not wait till old age to realize, as Daksha was saying, that will never happen. So now, whatever age we are in now, we may be 1 year old, we may be 20, we may be 50, we may be 100. We should take to this Krishna consciousness process right away, immediately, with great earnest, and defeat this enemy of karma. Next time, we will try to see where is this karma residing? What are the hiding places of this karma? If we are to eliminate, karma is our enemy, right? So we have to wage a war to kill that enemy. So like the terrorists, they attack, the intelligence agencies are always trying to find out where they are hiding, the hiding place. Then they will go and attack and kill them. So if we want to attack the enemy of lust, we should know where it is residing. And what is the danger that is caused to us by them? So this will be explained by Lord Krishna in the next verse. And that we will discuss next Saturday. So if you want to know where the enemy is hiding, the hiding place, you come and find out next Saturday. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Now we will have darshan, and after that we will have question answers. If you have time, we will have one mala of japa. Let us see. And then prasadam. Hare Krishna. Well, every cell is living. Even amoeba is a cell, unicellular organism. Those who studied biology in your school, it is also living. So it should not be surprising if cells have life also. But they cannot independently live. Few like amoeba or some other beings may be able to live. But there are many others which may not be able to live. They will have to live only within the shelter of a larger body. So there may be so many such phenomena going on within the body. But the predominant soul is us, we, I, within the body, who is in the heart, who is running this body. Paramatma is there in every atom, not even in every soul, in every heart. Paramatma is there in every atom. Anything that is sustained in this world is sustained only by the energy of the Lord. Dharayami aham ojasa. So Paramatma is everywhere. There is nowhere where Paramatma is not. And that is why the world is sustained, otherwise it cannot. Angushta matrena, yes, it is as big as a thumb. But thumb of that living entity. According to the body of that living entity, that person's thumb. Not standard our size thumb. Whatever the size of that body, according to that, whatever size of the thumb is there, that size.